Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-Fi Party Line Podcast. This is your hostess, Kat, and today my other co-host is Hanako.
Hello, people.
Yeah, and today, guess what? We're going to talk about Salem. You know, Hanako and I did that big epic Salem show. What was it? I don't know, maybe 3 months ago.
Yeah, right. Actually, I don't think it was quite that long ago, but I think it was before, it was either before or just after this current season started. So it's not that long ago.
Yeah, I think it was the first couple of episodes we did. I guess we could actually look at our website and see, but hey, nobody wants to go and do that.
So much has happened since then.
So Salem, it continues to be one of my favorites. You know, it is a kind of a violent show, but it's violent with kind of a mustache twirly, doesn't kind of bother me, whatever. And so I don't know. This
right.
I mean, enjoy it.
I guess because it's talking about a very violent period in the country's history, you know, in terms of the Salem witch trials and that period. So I guess it kind of fits.
Yeah, it fits, but I think they do like tone it down a little bit, and then they just kind of, it's kind of tongue in cheek because it's not actually historically accurate, but they pick and choose what they want to show, but it makes for great amusement television. So it's one of my ones that I look forward to. So I think we're gonna go with probably. Episode, we're just gonna randomly talk about second season here, and if you heard it before, whatever. But so I think what we come back in is Mary is trying to initiate the second act of the Grand Rite. We have Xena, warrior witch, coming in. She's here this season. And she's like one of the big bad witches, and she's like an elder witch causing problems. So we're gonna talk about what she brings to the table. Alden has returned to town, and I don't know, Hanako, he's problematic for me right now.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. Let's see. We had a special appearance by Increase Mather. We're gonna get into that. We have,
yes, you know, that's Kat's man right there.
Mercy is clowning. Somebody died that I told somebody on this podcast that said person would die, and he died.
I'm trying to think who you. Oh yeah. Well, you know what? You know what? The season's not over yet. I'm not convinced he's dead. I'm really not. And I know the last time we had those kind of predictions, I was wrong because we were talking about True Blood. But
she admits it now.
I admitted it. I was wrong. But I don't know, with this show and with that particular character, I don't know, something about the way that whole scenario went down, I don't think we've seen the last of him. You know, I really don't.
I have to agree with you because, like, he died in a sort of witch whatever. He died with his eyes open. He died alive. It's mystical. It's magical.
Yeah.
I think he's going to have a strong enough will to where he will figure out a way to come back, and like Mercy did. But maybe he'll be disfigured like Mercy or something like that. But I really thought he was a great character. I think he really challenged Mary Sibley in a way that was, you know, epic. I think that him bringing science to the table was really great, especially with the how much does the soul weigh, and you weigh one thing when you are alive, but once you die, you lose this exact exact amount of weight, and it's the same within all people. And we've heard this theory before, but it's, you know, it's the stuff of Hollywood films, but it's always an interesting topic to see how old films do science. And it was perfectly archaic and wrong about a lot of things, but really great to the way they portrayed it. And Stewart is doing a great job.
I love him. I love his character, but I like him too. So, you know, just as an actor. So, yeah. Okay, so where are we going to start?
Let's start with Mercy. So the last we talked about,
y'all Mercy. Know how I feel about Mercy. I think in the last podcast, my exact words were "die, bitch, die." So, my opinion has not changed.
You know what? I don't really feel that way about Mercy. I think Mercy has gotten the wrong end of the stick. The whole show, she was manipulated by Mary Sibley to be a pawn in her witch whatever thing, and Mercy then just kind of got damaged, and now she's like, you know what, I'm damaged and I'm gonna kick some ass now because you people are not gonna treat me any kind of way. Then like Mary tried to kill her. That didn't work. She was like a creepy, burnt Freddy Krueger for a while. And when Princess Countess Marburg, or however you, Lucy Lawless, yes, came in on the scene, she got her friend conveniently was like went to go pick up bread or something while all the other witches were burning and died.
Yeah.
And she was unscarred, and she was kind of like helping creepy Mercy Lewis do things, and turns out she ended up being kind of a bloodbath for Mercy to get her beautiful looks back. So she got, not only did she get her hair back, she got her beauty looks back, and she's been skulking around town kidnapping children to bring to Countess Marburg for food.
Yeah, but she's been using them herself as well.
Yeah. Oh, so, yes. She's been...
You know, you can't keep up that kind of beauty without sacrifice, I guess. But, yeah, I'm just, you know, Mercy, which we knew Mercy was going to have another purpose once she didn't die in the fire pit. And it, you know, her main purpose has been at this point to find Mary Sibley's weakness, which she was able to do by presenting herself to Mary's son, which I think we discussed this a little bit in the last podcast episode, but Mary Sibley and John Alden created a baby together before he left for war. And once she thought that he had died, she went into the woods with Tituba to kind of give up her baby in exchange for privilege and power. So she I guess you can say kind of sort of gave birth to the baby or aborted the baby in some weird witch ritual. And it turns out that the baby lived and was being raised in the woods by the elder witches for 7 years. So now she has her son back. And things were going kind of weird. There was something always, even from the beginning, about this little boy that was kind of off. And we see that he has a certain way about him. He can, the crows present themselves to him in such a weird way. And he's,
I think they are drawn to him, but once they get around him, they drop dead or something.
Yeah. And it was, it was discovered just in the last couple of episodes that the whole resurrection of Lucifer that the witches are trying to do, they're trying to bring him back to Earth. And it turns out that right now it looks like he is inhabiting the body of Mary's son. He's lying dormant in that body. And right now the plan for Countess Marburg is to sacrifice Little John, which is the name he took for himself.
Yeah,
he's to be sacrificed in order to bring the quote unquote Dark Lord, as she calls it. Every time she does that, I think Voldemort in my head. But anyway, so he's going to be sacrificed, and it's because of this sacrifice. Once Mary realized that was what the intent was, now she has taken it upon herself to basically fight back. She is now fighting for her son. In the midst of everything, she has confessed everything to John Alden, who at the beginning of the season she thought was dead. She just realized last episode or two episodes ago that he's alive. So she's confessed all to him. He knows about his son. He knows fully about her. Her role in the Witch Wars. He knows who she is as far as her status of power, how she got there. He knows everything. She basically got to the point where she laid it all out on the table for him in an effort to say, I need you to help me save our son.
So I like that.
That whole scene was so powerful, and it was one of the best scenes of the show, I think. You know, it was very... We're so used to seeing Mary Sibley in control and basically being mean and nasty like to George Sibley, or, you know, just kind of being underhanded to the other people, talking down to the people who are standing in her way. And in this scene, we really got to see some tenderness from her and just raw emotion, you know, based in her love for John and everything that they have gone through. And now everything she has lost and stands to lose. And I think at that point she was just like, okay, at this point I have nothing else to lose. There are no more lies worth telling if it's not going to save my son. So I might as well put everything out there. And she did. And it was a great scene. It was a really great scene.
I also like how John, he took the information in, which was a lot of information, but he kind of stopped processing the information once he knew that he had a son. He just was like, I have a son. And she's just like, I was this, and I went to the woods, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And she, you know, vomited it out, all of this stuff. And then after she was done, he was like, I have a son. I was just like,
the looks on his face. Okay, now, you know, my household, me and my two girls, we already love Shane West to death, and we have for years. But in that particular scene, just the facial expressions, and it was just like, oh, yes, you have a son. Go find him and be happy. You know, it's just, like I said, one of my favorite scenes in the show so far, just that whole interaction, as she's taking him, you know, as she's telling him, and then she starts cutting him loose. And then when she takes him to her home so he can see the boy's room, it's just, you know, it was kind of, it was very, very, you know, it was very, I don't know. It was just very emotional. And then when he saw the boy for the first time, that was a great scene. Aww. Because the little boy just looked like, you're my dad. It's like little John had to kind of process, like, okay, my dad's not alive. He's dead. She, you know, and I guess he had to think about it when John came and rescued him from the woods. She said, John, take him and go. So I guess, you know, it's like, oh, she was talking to him, and he just gave him a hug. And the look on John Alden's face was just like, but we needed to have that good look, because that look that came at the end of last week's episode when Satan started talking through the little boy, that was just,
oh my God. Yeah, like, okay, we're getting ready to watch Damien. All right. Right. So yeah, I agree with you about that scene as well, because what a great way to think that you don't have your father. You're all of a sudden find out you're in the middle of a witch war, and you inhabit Lucifer, and perhaps you're about to die, and you're with this weird lady who's giving you a bath, who won't let you go back to your mom. Yeah. And so, you know, you're out in the woods, your mom is being weird, and then all of a sudden this stuff goes down, this mysterious guy on a horse comes and whisks you out. Like, as a person who thought perhaps he was an orphan just maybe a few months ago, he finds out he has a mom. Then the ultimate, all little boys want a dad. So to think that, oh, my dad's away, or oh, my dad's dead, to get whisked away about this from the whisked away by this manly man on the back of a horse and you know, rescued in such an adventurous fashion, and then to go home and find out that this same hero is your dad. I think that that was, you know, expertly done. And I do agree that this is probably the last tender moment that this child is gonna have. Because he's been weird the whole time. He's mean to Tituba, which, you know, don't care. And like, how do you keep a child out for 7 years in the woods, a secret from their mother? I mean, that's super, right. That's super weird. I don't know. So it's just, you know,
I that think child that has been through a lot in the last couple of months.
Yeah. Yeah. So another thing that I really liked about what we're doing is that I like that Increase Mather came back. What did you think about?
You know what? I kind of thought it was, I was kind of skeptical about him coming back for a moment because, especially at the beginning of the episode where, you know, the episode where he's really prominent, because Cotton, in his drunken stupor or whatever he was going through, his emotional state at the time, you know, he thought he saw his father and it was kind of freaking him out. And I really thought, okay, you know what, after everything, that would be such a dick move for you to come back and just, you know, the little time that you have, just, you know, torture your son, which you already know how messed up Cotton is, because his father never believed in him. His father never loved him. And then for it to actually come back and be such a great scene between father and son and kind of that closure, I was like, okay, I like this. You know me, I like stuff like that. I like when the shows draw me in emotionally, and it was a great scene. But also the fact that, I guess, he realized in his error just kind of how he had done things wrong. And, you know, he wasn't the all-knowing Increase Mather, because the one thing that supposedly made him so great, he finds out from Mary, oh, you didn't do it. That bitch you said that you killed, she's walking in Salem now. So I guess, at the end, he was like, okay, let me help them get rid of this once and for all. And, you know, we'll see whether or not it helps, but, you know, it was good to have him on there and be, I guess, useful to the cause instead of his, I don't know. I have a really, really big problem with arrogance in general. So Increase Mather alive walking around in the same town where his son was with the attitude that he had, it did not endear him as a character to me. So that's why I always laugh when you talk about him.
I like the actor more than anything. So, and he's always, I think that he's one of those really, really old school, you know, Bible thumping guys who think the only way to show love is through like the end of a switch and in one hand and the Bible in the other hand. So, you know, he thought that the only way to get his son to be the son that he needed him to be was to be incredibly hard on him and to ride him and things like that. So it wasn't the right thing for Cotton per se, but maybe if we didn't get Cotton to be, if he wasn't this way to Cotton, maybe Cotton wouldn't be the soft kind of, well, not soft in a bad way, but reflective.
He wouldn't have the strength to do what he's trying to do in Salem, because if you really think about it, Cotton is on the mark. He has literally spelled out everything that the witches were gonna do, what they've been doing, and what they plan to do, and he has been right at every turn. Oh, and that's another thing we need to talk about, because the way that this show is treating Cotton Mather and the way that everybody is treating Cotton Mather, my daughters and I, we got a problem with it.
It feels like he's having a little bit of the Cassandra syndrome from 12 Monkeys, where, you know things and you say things, but no one believes you, and it happens to be the truth. So You know, what can you do? But yeah, let's talk about Cotton. I want to talk about one thing in particular first, and then we can talk about all the other little things. So what do you think about the Anne Hale situation?
Let's talk about Anne Hale. That's so funny because my daughter's standing in my room and I said, let's talk about Anne Hale. She said, let's not. But Anne Hale. Okay. I think I'm starting to like her a lot more as a character.
I agree.
She, you know, she was put into a situation she did not expect, just by accident, just from regular childish, you know, curiosity or being nosy. She finds out by accident she's a witch, and through that, she kills her parents by accident, or maybe on purpose. We don't know.
I think it's accident. Then
through all of this, she's been learning more things about herself. She's been growing more and more powerful, and she's been she's actually been standing on her own as opposed to being a pawn. You know, she was approached at the beginning of the season by Countess Marburg, and you know, we thought, oh, she's going to be in league with her, and then we thought, oh, maybe she'll be in league with Mary, and basically she has told both of them, I'm not standing up for both of you, I'm standing on my own, and I like that.
Yeah.
For her character. Now, that being said, I do not like the fact that she spelled Cotton to yes. fall in love with her, because I think them as a couple anyway, they are so cute together.
I don't think she and had to. That was my point of bringing her and Cotton up too.
Right.
I don't think she even had to.
I don't think she did either. I think his whole thing, I think he was attracted to her, but trying to keep her away from his madness and what he was dealing with, I think that's why he kind of rejected her. And I really think it was just desperation, which I can understand, because if I had somebody creepy like Hawthorne coming after me, I probably would have done the same thing. That man.
Didn't he have John Alden in his room with a knife to his throat or something? Or the time when she came over and tried to kiss him. Yeah, it was like either that or his dead dad. And I was like, yeah, you know, it just wasn't the right time.
Right. But again, she didn't know what was going on with him. But at the same time, you know, Hawthorne had just left her basically threatening, okay, you're going to marry me or I'm going to make sure you're ruined. And with her being as young and inexperienced as she is, I think she just panicked. And of course, Mary fed into that panic by giving her the spell and, you know, just kind of dropping hints. But, you know, she didn't do it maliciously. And I think in the end, she's still trying to be a good person. I don't know how long that's going to last, especially given the powers that are in Salem right now and the witch war that's going on. But I really hope she's able to hold on to what her character is and who she is. And for it to have a good outcome for her. I would love to see Anne be the one to do it with Mercy.
Yeah, I kind of feel that the Mercy and Anne are going to have a war, and then Xena and Mary will have a war, and it will just be like that. I also think that the Xena's son and Sexy Stuart Townsend are going to have a battle, or perhaps John Alden and Sexy
You
son.
Want me to tell you what my theory is?
Pray tell, yes.
Here's my theory about the good doctor. Okay, we saw in the last few episodes where he has started also figuring out what was going on, that maybe Cotton Mather had some semblance of the truth, and then he saw it fully, you know, in his face, and he went straight to the source. He went to Mary, and Mary was all ready to kill him because she thought he was going to sell her out. No, he's like, no, I want in. And it, you know, just really became clear that not for malicious purposes, but him being a doctor, him being a scientist, he was really curious about the science behind witchcraft and the whole thing. So
yeah.
We see he became a willing partner to Mary. Now, notice, he ain't asked not once where her husband is. You know, nobody has even noticed that George simply is gone. But least of all him, she having sex and showing him the universe in the marital bed, that scene was awesome. Okay? But, you know, he basically let her know, I am in this. I don't care what I have to do, what you need me to do. I am in. He tore up he burned up all of his books, all of his research, everything just on her word that she was gonna show him all. So I think with him being that open to it, of course you had Dear Sebastian come in and his jealousy, which he is creepy. I don't like him either. He's really creepy. He needs to stop walking around in people's houses uninvited.
He looks like an older version of Mary's son.
He does. And I think that was actually great casting because, of course, through the bits and pieces of Countess Marburg's tales that we've been finding out, she was the original bride of Lucifer. So she's been around since the time of Jesus and Adam and Eve and all of that. Oh. And apparently she tried to do the grand rite on her own before and she failed. And I believe just piecing together the kind of the way they talk around the subject and the banter between she and Sebastian, I believe that at the time she tried the grand rite, Sebastian was supposed to be the vessel or the sacrifice, and it didn't work out. So Sebastian is around. He's grown. I mean, you think about it. She has this weird, slightly incestuous relationship with him.
Yeah.
But it's not become a full out relationship, at least not that we've seen on the show. You know, it's not a Lannister thing. But but we do know that there's some inappropriateness there, which if she really thought that her quote unquote husband was inhabiting that body, we can kind of see where that would go. I mean, even with Mary's son, when she was bathing him, she kissed him and she kissed him to the point where, or long enough and strong enough to where when they broke apart, we saw his eyes and his face change to show that, yes, there was a dark soul inside that body waiting to come out. So my thing is, I think the similarities between Sebastian and Little John are supposed to be apparent, which they did great with that. Mm. But going back to the doctor, here's my thing. The whole with Cotton and John and Mary now is they're trying to save Little John. Cotton still does not know who this child is or what relation or, you know, he is to John and Mary. He still has no clue. He just knows that they know that this child is supposed to be the sacrifice. If he's sacrificed, if he dies, then, you know, the Dark Lord comes back. But I think if they end up saving that child, because of the way Wainwright was killed, you know, he was pushed into the
abyss.
I can't think of, I can't even think. He was pushed into the crag, into the devil's, the abyss. I really think if they save the little boy, I think the devil will come back using Wainwright as the vessel. Mainly because of Wainwright's openness to accept all of that.
Yeah.
I think he would be a great substitute.
That's good.
And I think that's just my own theory. I don't go online and read other theories and stuff because I don't want it to cloud my thinking of the whole thing. But that's kind of what I thought, because when Sebastian pushed him and he was in there and he was yelling and Sebastian saying his, you know, his little spiel, and Wainwright is just sinking. But notice he wasn't burning up. He wasn't, you know, it wasn't anything that made me think, okay, this guy is dead. I was like, no, I said, Sebastian, you're going to get yours, and you're going to get yours in a good way. I have a feeling he's going to come back. I have a feeling Sebastian is going to die by his hand. But that's just me. You know, I like the whole karma thing. So, for karma's sake, that would just be the best way for that to go down. But yeah, of course, I could be also totally off. But I think if they save the little boy, then he's going to come back. He's going to come back in Wainwright's body. I don't know if Stuart Townsend will be coming back for season three. I don't know. Or if they happen to bring him, you know, bring the character back just for that particular purpose. And then they still are able to vanquish him and defeat him. I don't know if they're going to try to do all of that within the next, what, two? I think it's two episodes left. Two or three episodes left. So
yeah, that's a lot to work around.
We'll see. But that's kind of how I think. But I would love to see Stuart Townsend stay, because like I said, I love him as an actor anyway, and he has been phenomenal in this season of Salem. Just right. I love him. So yes, I would like for him to stay. So hey, if you guys at Salem or any of y'all are listening, please let him stay.
Oh, that's good. That's a really great theory, but it is a lot to work around in two episodes. I would like to see your theory come to light, because it's just a good thing. And I think it would
y'all
be
record that she actually agrees with one of my theories.
I like your theories a lot of the time, and I like that one because it gives us a big bad for the next season, and it gives John Alden something to be jealous about, right? Because if Stuart Townsend comes back as the Dark Lord, then him and Mary already have had sex. They've connected. He has pinned her up against a door and had his way with his hands. And that was some inappropriateness. But they have a thing going on. They have a chemistry. And if John sees that for the woman that he loved long ago, then, you know, maybe that'll be a thing, you know? And so it might be a good thing to see something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
So, okay.
I was going to say, I want to see how Mary's going to take the fact that Tituba tried to seduce John. Because poor Tituba, we haven't even talked about her yet. Her little conniving, backstabbing, throwing shit. I will say this, though. Tituba has been throwing the most shade at Mary this season, and I have been loving it. That scene after she let Wainwright tie her up the next morning, Tituba came in and said, if you wanted to know what it was like to be a slave, you need only ask. I was like, oh, shade, shade.
So I feel the reverse about Tituba. I don't see her purpose. I see her dying soon. She is not Mary Sibley's friend. She hasn't been pretty much ever. She's not. She's like, me and you are the only people who have loved Mary Sibley, her and John. And I'm like, so, okay, let me get this straight. You love Mary. You know that John loves Mary. So you think that it's a great idea for you and John to have sex?
Well, I think at that point she was upset. And I think if that situation had happened, say, last season, I don't think Tituba would have even thought about it. But again, like I said earlier about Mary and the way she's been treating people this season, Tituba is one of the people she has been horrendous to, which I can understand given the fact that Tituba knew her child was alive. But still, if you really think about it, you're supposed to be like the head witch in charge. You know what the elder witches are about, and you know what kind of damage they can do. Imagine a person being in Tituba's position where it's like, okay, we know that you love her, we know that you serve her, but ultimately you serve us first. And if you tell her that her son is alive, you know, there's no telling what kind of threats were made, but also
I don't think that Tituba was that servile in that position.
No,
she was
a
go-between, but I think she agreed with them, and she held that
she
secret.
She did, and that's what I was going to say. She did because of the fact she knew that the boy was going to be used as the sacrifice in the Grand Rite, and as far as her, I guess you can kind of look at it as like a religious fanatic. It's like whatever you have to do to have that end result, their whole end result is to bring Lucifer back. And if that's what it takes, they say a great sacrifice has to be made. Well, what greater sacrifice than killing your son? I mean, it's Abraham and Isaac.
No.
On the dark, you know what I'm saying?
No. A greater sacrifice than killing somebody else's son. Because that's what Tituba's doing. She thought maybe she had an abortion, which in her case...
No. I don't think she knew. I mean, I don't think she went into those woods with the intent of it being an abortion. I think Tituba did exactly what they were supposed to do. I think that they used Mary because of her vulnerable state. One, she was like a lowly peasant girl. She's unwed. She's pregnant. Her baby daddy is off the war, possibly dead. They took a girl in a desperate situation and offered her the world. And all she had to do was just this one thing, give up her baby. They never once, if you go back to the pilot, if you go back to the episode where all this happens, she never once says anything about killing the baby or aborting it or whatever terminology the term they always use is giving it up. Giving it up. I think Tituba knew what she was doing from the start, and I think because of what they were trying to do, their whole goal was to get someone who would be powerful enough to complete the grand rite. They knew that Mary would be that, but she would not be that being a mother, because the child would always come first for her. So they had to put her in they had to raise her up to the position and the status she was in so that she could be the most powerful woman in the town. And then once that, you know, I guess maybe they thought once that sacrifice came in and she knew, okay, this is what you were going to have to do in order to complete the grand rite, hopefully that time and distance would have severed whatever bond she may have had with the child, and she would be willing to do it. Well, now they find out, no, her bond to her child is what's, you know, is what's good. And then also once John Alden came back, that was when I think it started falling apart, because they realized, okay, she's powerful. She wants this to happen. But at the same time, her loyalties were split, because she was really wanting to go be with John. She was trying to be with John. She was trying not to be with John. And it was just kind of like she was being pulled in a couple of different directions. So here now, okay, you're thinking about leaving, running off with John Alden, not completing the grand rite. Well, guess what? Look what we have for you. We have your son. That was the only reason why she stayed in Salem. She was gonna leave. She wasn't gonna complete the grand rite. Remember, she sent Isaac with the Malum into the crags and told him to get rid of it. Isaac was the one who opened it, and innocent, you know, in effect, completed it, because he did what was supposed to be done. But Mary was about to give up all of that to go run off with John. And then, of course, they showed her the child. She couldn't leave. And they've been holding that child as leverage for her. Remember, none of the witches actually told her, your child is to be used for sacrifice. It was her enemy, Marburg, who told her, this is what he's here for. And once Mary realized, oh, that's what y'all bitch has been doing to me. Oh, she's mad now.
I agree with her being mad. And then that's why I don't teach it, but I can't mess with her. And now I really don't feel bad about her being tortured last season. Another thing I want to point out too, I think I thought abortion for that is because the first time I watched Salem, I think I watched it perhaps on Hulu. And, you know, Hulu has commercials. And for that first episode, they showed a Plan B commercial. And so I was like, you know, way to go, Salem, showing a, you know, Plan B commercial in the middle of a woman, you know, in the woods having an abortion. Way to go. So it always associated and felt she had an abortion, just because, I don't know, that was my first experience with the show. Yeah, but I brought
that child back. And right before the season, I did go back and watch that first episode. And
you're right.
I think it was just always gave him up. Of course, Mary would have thought that he was dead, because, of course, she didn't physically give birth to him. Yeah. But, you know, those witches got their ways. You know, when you have witches crawling up in trees, turning their heads backwards and doing all this other stuff, then transferring a baby from a mama's stomach to somewhere else, that's no big deal.
So, you know, something else I thought of when you were talking, the malum, the red apple malum thing. Yes. So it was with Stuart Townsend, and when he was burning his things, he burned it.
Yes, he did.
So that lends a little bit more credibility to your theory, because I think the fact that they showed it and they lingered on it and it was him doing it, something's going on, you know? Mm-hmm. Something means mm-hmm. something. It means something.
Yeah, we'll see. We got a few episodes, so I'm really curious. You know, at first I wasn't sure how, because Salem was such, you know, when it first came out, I was just interested in it because I kind of, you know, I like that whole, you know, history of the Salem witch trials. You know, that sort of thing has always kind of fascinated me, because it's like, how in the world did they go to this mass hysteria and kill all these women and do all this and whatever? And so when they said that they were going to do a show about it and just kind of take some of the events and kind of put their own spin on it, like what could have happened or how it could have started, I was like, okay, it's historical fiction and it's, you know, it's kind of cool. And then when the season came, it was so much better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
So of course, sometimes you kind of wonder about the second season. Oh, can you be as good as the first? And they blow my mind with it. It's been really good. Now, there are some characters that I think haven't been used as much. I have missing Isaac. Because Isaac is also one of those, he's also kind of one of those, I guess you could say one of those emotional ties for Mary, because, and we find this out more in the last couple of episodes, especially when she's doing her confession to John. You know, apparently Isaac and the girlfriend that he was branded for in the first episode, they were all really good friends as children. And mm-hmm. one of the reasons why Mary did this was so that the people who were responsible for, you know, basically torturing and branding Isaac and
which was George Sibley.
Right. Putting them to shame and stuff. You know, her whole point of gaining power was so that she could kind of, I guess you could say, right some of those wrongs, but also take the power away from those people who had it, which in essence, George Sibley and company, which she did. And she did with George Sibley brilliantly, because by the end of his life, George was her bitch. Like, she was like, I mean, she didn't even have to threaten him. He was opening his mouth for the toll. All she had to gross. Do was, yeah, all she had to do was put his hand up her skirt once and be like, okay, you'll get a taste of this. He's like, okay, I'll do whatever you want me to do. What you want me to do? And then for him to get up in that church, as powerful as he was, and stand up, and he went off on Hawthorne, and everything was just going, I was like, oh, he really wants her. Even after everything she had put him through, he's like, oh, I got a new purpose.
He was having a little bit of, what do you call it when somebody kidnaps you and you start
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah, I think he had that severely. And, yeah, you probably. Know, like, what is his character for anymore anyway? Like, he's disgusting. He's not there for nothing. So I'm glad they killed him off.
And yeah, but how they disposed of his,
yeah, he's just disgusting. And so I was like,
well, you do realize how Sebastian got rid of him, right? You did catch that.
What did he do?
Okay, so you remember that whole little bargain they were supposed to have, and Sebastian was supposed to get rid of George in a timely manner, right? Okay, they had that huge dinner that night.
Oh, they ate
That was George.
Gross. Yes, yeah. I forgot.
Because she said something to him. She was like, and she's steady sitting there eating, and she said something to him about getting rid of George. He said, we already did. And he looks at the meal, and I'm just looking like, oh my God, this just gross.
Some Hannibal Lecter in there. That's gross. I don't think, because it didn't seem like they had enough meat for that to be charged.
It didn't seem like what?
It was enough meat for it to be George.
I don't know now. They brought out a big, they brought out, because they brought out something on a plate and it looked like a huge roast type thing, but I thought it was like a huge hen or something because it was just this big chunk of pale meat. So I'm thinking, okay, it's chicken or it's turkey and it's just, you know, it was white meat, all right. But, you know, it was just.
Oh my god. Okay, so you mentioned Magistrate Hawthorne. He came into town trying to run some stuff. And what is he there for? What is he doing? He's just causing trouble.
He is there to be the resident pedophile because the fact that he is old as dirt and he is literally trying to seduce and blackmail and all this other stuff to get in her bed, and that's all he wants, just to get in her bed and to ruin her. I mean, just the way he was talking about her in the bar, see, I was like, oh, please, Cotton, hit him. And as soon as he did, we're sitting downstairs watching, like, we're watching an MMA fight. We're like, yes, whoop his ass, Cotton.
Oh, Cotton went off, girl. He did. And I think, like, he did not, I think the writers making Anne put a love spell on Cotton was really a misstep, in my opinion, because, you know, it's not going to end well. He's going to find out. They're going to break up. It's going to be a thing.
Yeah. And that was my thing. I was going to say, once he finds out what's going on with her and who she is or what she is, you know what, though? I kind of think even if he comes out from under her spell, even if he never finds out that she spelled him, I think he probably loves her enough that if he finds out she's a witch, it may change his whole mindset about the witches.
It won't. Because didn't
or it won't, and then she'll be one of the kills, but I don't think I see him doing that.
Yeah,
I
mean, but John
Mather, this is the man who fell in love with a prostitute and didn't care who knew. You know, he has that kind of heart. So I think if he were to find out Anne was a witch, it would kind of show him that, hey, okay, maybe not all of them are bad. I don't know if it would be enough to stop him from his quote unquote purpose, but I think it would be enough to at least give him pause.
Yeah, but I think John went the opposite way. He found out Mary was a witch and he got crazy. He cut off his hair. He's stupid with tattoos. He's doing some zombies.
Well,
I don't even know what he's doing. Like, why is he upset again? I forgot. Wait, I did my rewatch, but I stopped up at like episode 5, so I didn't get to really far, but I did take a lot of notes and I remember a lot of things. So
I think the reason why he's mad is because he had an issue with all of the innocent people being killed, and then to find out that it was Mary behind it, I think that was just too much for him. You know, because remember they had to kill,
she thought he was dead. Yeah.
Yeah, but no, even while he was alive, they were still killing people because they had to have 13 innocent souls for the grand rite. So all this stuff, people going in and being hung and all of this other stuff that was going on, John Alden was alive and in the town during the time that this all happened. So I think that's part of his anger as far as being betrayed by her, because she was in effect the one who was doing all of that. You know, she was the reason these people were being hanged and or hung and, you know, all this other stuff. I think the other thing is, if I'm not mistaken, I think John actually did die at the end of season 1. And remember, he was with the Native Americans and they were the ones who took care of him. They brought him back and they are the ones who, you know, I guess he wanted a way to kill the witches and they gave it to him, but it's coming at a cost because he's drawing vengeful energy, I guess, from nature or the land or whatever you want to call it. So It's like, if he takes them, if he kills the witches, then in, at the same time, he's going to be killed too, because he's doing it for a noble cause, but he's still killing.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's going to find out and take the spell off, and he's going to be fine. I'm just not, I don't feel danger for him. I think he probably is going to be cured with, like, true love's kiss or some crap like that.
I don't know.
But so what else do we have on Salem? Mercy Lewis, like, so what is her character for now anyway? Now that we know she's back and she's doing this, we need to figure out, like, they need to figure out something or kill her, because right now she's just mustache twirling.
Right. We know she killed her dad. I'm guessing she killed her dad, because they were saying that that last church service that Hawthorne was officiating, he was saying that Reverend Lewis was missing or not there. And you know, we know she killed Dolly. We saw that in the last episode. Poor Isaac. Like, he just can't catch a break. He just, poor thing, he needs to get out of town.
Why wouldn't you leave at that point? He doesn't really have a job that is keeping him in that town.
No.
So, I mean, and like, he walks around and you can't really see his brand, because he creatively has like bangs or something. So, it hides well. He should go be a fisherman in another town
or something. I don't know, since Dolly is dead, I don't know if he's gonna stay around and try to, I don't know, help take down the witches. I don't know if he's gonna seek out Cotton Mather and try to figure out what was going on, because I think by now, of course, Isaac has probably figured out that Mary is a witch. So
he's a little slow, so maybe he hasn't quite figured it out.
Slow, but you have to remember that whole time he was sitting at Mercy's house, you know, Mercy was basically talking. He was probably paying attention. So, and of course, Dolly, she wasn't walking around talking like Freddy Krueger. So anything that she might have said regarding the whole situation, Isaac would have known, he would have heard, he would have paid attention. And then the fact that that Mary was on the boat that he was on, even though she was letting people off, you know, you can't get on that boat unless you know something about the person who was there. So Isaac had to know, okay, I don't know how exactly you're mixed up in this, but you're mixed up in this. And, you know, and he told her, there was a time when I would have done anything you told me to do, you know, when you were my friend, when I believed anything you said, and I just don't anymore. And I think it's because he really understands now that she is part of what has happened to him.
Yeah.
So as much as she tried to shield him from everything, it's just like, again, that's that emotional tie, you know? It's like she keeps trying to protect people that she loves, or, you know, try to do things that will keep them out of harm's way, and instead she keeps drawing them in. So,
what can you do?
Yeah. I know. Poor Mary. But yeah, I'm excited to see what she's going to do in the next couple of episodes, because she's pissed. She found Countess Marburg's original body. She burnt it. I mean, she did it like boss.
Oh, well, I thought that she was going to find like the body of her son or something like that. I didn't know that she was carrying around her own body.
Yeah, that was the whole tale that Increase Mather was telling her. That's how she stays alive, that, you know, even though she's been dead or murdered or killed or whatever time and time and time again, she can't ever really die because she still has her original body.
So how does that work?
You know, I'm not that well versed in witchcraft, that sort of thing. But I believe that there was an explanation about it a couple of episodes back. We'll probably just have to go back and look. But I think it's kind of sort of like a totem. You know, it's kind of like, as long as that body exists, her soul still remains, you know, on this spiritual plane. So she just, you know, I don't know where she's getting her new bodies from.
Oh, because she has to with the blood, right?
Yeah, but if she's dying, well, yeah. But she apparently keeps jumping. She's jumped bodies before. So I don't know if she uses uses up a body, and then once it's done, she finds another body to go inhabit. I don't know if that's what she's doing, but I think her body jumping days are over, because I think that corpse got burnt pretty quickly.
It already looked burnt.
Well, I mean, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years old, you didn't expect it to come out looking, you know, with porcelain skin.
Mm-hmm. No, I really like the little hellscape that Mary had to go into to get that body.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it was just well done, because she had to go in there. I don't know if it actually did anything to her or if it was, you know, just a mental exercise, but it was really cool.
Yeah. And the fact that once she touched the body, it was kind of deteriorating her. So I guess, you know, it was a great security mechanism. Because in order for somebody to actually steal that body, they really would have had to have the strength and drive to make it through. And we just saw then Mary was determined. She was like, oh, this is burning my hands. Okay, whatever. Let's get her out. And she pushed forward and she kept going. So we'll see. You know, she like she said, she knew her son was in danger. So,
yeah, that's gonna be so good. Let's
talk about that little boy and that little reveal at the end of
very Poltergeist.
That was the creepiest shit. Oh my, because we're just sitting there and Cotton and John are talking, and he said, and you know, he says that what was it, you're already too late. I don't know. He threatened them in a great way, but he was standing there and his body was turned one way and his head was turned the opposite way and his eyes were black. And I was like, oh my God, am I watching Supernatural? It was just the creepiest thing. And it was so creepy because it was coming from the body of, it was, you know, you've got this horrid voice and these eyes and stuff, and they're coming from a 7-year-old's face. And it's so funny because I have to go back and look and see what else this kid has been in, but for whatever reason, whenever I look him in the face, he reminds me of, like, I don't know if you remember way back, he reminds me of like a live action Pinocchio. Like if they were to take Pinocchio and put him with a hat and be a real boy, that's what this little boy reminds me of. So it's so funny because he has the cutest little face, but his expressions, this little boy is great at his age, because his expressions, he goes from sweet and innocent looking, now all of a sudden he's kind of menacing, and then all of a sudden he's kind of creepy, and it's just kind of like, I don't know what to think about you, but you scare me. You know, it's just, I don't know. They've got some really great acting talent on this show, so.
Yeah. You know, that little boy in the reveal and his head turn around with a different, like, we've seen that 100 times, Hanako. How are you impressed by that yet again?
Because he, like I said, they have great acting talent. He was just, it was just, you know, and it's kind of like I expected it, but still. And I think it's probably the way the scene was set up, because you've got Cotton and you've got John, and both of them, you've got Cotton who is kind of trying to figure things out. You've got John who's always walking around looking angry. And then just the look of sheer, oh, fuck, what was that on their faces when they heard the voice. I think that's probably probably more than anything is, because it's like they were talking, then all of a sudden their whole expression changed, like, oh, we're in trouble now. And it's just, I don't know, that their expressions just kind of made that scene for me. It was like, okay. And then we turn around and we see him, and it's just like, okay, this scene just got really creepy really fast. And for me to say that on a show like Salem, where they've got creepy stuff all the time, yeah, they did a good job with it.
Yeah, nah, I was yawning on it. I was just like, oh, whatever, okay. Whatever.
This from the same person who was bored by the White Walker versus Wildling fight in Game of Thrones last week. I'm not paying you any attention. I ain't studying you.
Whatever. Yeah, so we have a couple more episodes of Salem, and I think we will discuss those then, but for now we will, you know, wait with bated breath to see how this wraps up on Salem. And I feel like it's going to be tragic, but epic, yes, and triumphant probably. And I don't know. We'll see.
Yep.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right. So you ready to wrap the show up?
I am.
All right. So guys, give us a call at 773-336-2686. We are at scifipartyline.com. You can reach us at scifipartyline.com, at gmail.com. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and Google+. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we will see you at the party next time. Bye.